Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome to the podcast for creating predictable revenue. This is episode number 2, and I'll be joined momentarily by my co-host, Aaron Ross, and a guest to talk about the importance of being an SDR before leading an outbound team. On this episode, we talk with Matt Amundson, the VP of Sales Development and Field Marketing at Everstring, an AI-driven audience segmentation platform. For salespeople, means he's going to help you build a great list. For marketing people, he's going to help you segment your lists in ways you never thought you could. In this episode, we're going to talk millennials and breaking away from high-velocity prospecting. Some highlights include getting over phone fear, persona-based cadences, and building an SDR team from the ground up.
And we're back.
Hey everybody, we're here with Matt Amundson from Everstring, an award-winning SDR leader, cupcake connoisseur, and recovering inbound lead addict. Matt, we're going to start off the conversation today talking about the one thing that you do that has made the biggest contribution to your success leading an outbound sales team.
No pressure.
No pressure. I think it's a lot of things. I think getting one sort of high-level sort of HRE type answer to that is, I think getting in touch and into the mind of how millennials think and want to work and want to be managed. I think that's helped me out tremendously. It's a lesson that I learned over the course of being at a few different companies, but sort of all came together here at Everstring. And that lesson is that young people want exposure to lots of different types of things, right? They don't want to be relegated to pushing buttons and twisting knobs inside of applications like SalesLoft and Outreach and things like that. They want to be creative. They want exposure to the marketing department, the sales teams. They want to think differently. And giving them the freedom and flexibility to think that way has made them wildly successful. And in turn, they've taught me a ton about sales development that I never truly understood. Okay. So that's the sort of HR answer. I think the more practical answer for an SDR audience is we got away from, you know, sort of batching and blasting and sort of operating off of high velocity numbers like hundreds of calls a day and hundreds of emails, and really broke it down to a much smaller number of sends, a much smaller number of touches that were highly personalized, where relevance was at the epicenter of our message.
Perfect. Go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to ask about the millennials.
Okay.
First.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my question. How do you, by the way, we have a lot of millennials at our company.
Yeah.
But, you know, Colin here is the day-to-day hands-on. Are you a millennial?
I'm not sure. Cusp, maybe?
I'm not sure either. You're only 30 though. So, all right. So the question is, all right. By the way, I totally agree. Exposing SDRs or any employee to other parts of the company, they can marketing, product, support. How do you channel all that creativity so that it's ultimately helpful rather than a huge distraction from the job they're hired for?
Yeah, it's a hard balance to find, but it's about putting guidelines in. So Aaron, you're a SoCal guy, so I'm sure you've spent a little bit of time at Disney.
Yeah, I am, yeah. Well, oh yeah. Season passes, baby.
Yeah. So I lived in Orange County for a while and we had passes with our children as well. And I kind of think about Autotopia. You have the freedom and flexibility to drive those cars, but there's a rail in the middle that you can't come off.
Well, okay, hold on. I buy that's hilarious. You know, if you have Autotopia, this is the ride where you're in a car, there's two of you, there's a seatbelt, and you can steer the wheel.
Yeah.
And you move, no matter how much you steer, you can move a little bit, but it's like false driving.
Yeah.
It's like the illusion of driving for kids. But I totally get the point, actually.
So
I like the analogy.
You give them the illusion of creativity?
The illusion of creativity. That's a great idea. We'll put that into the next planning session.
Exactly. When you think about it from this perspective, if your marketing department is able to arm your SDR team with a common theme or message that they can apply to every email, every social touch, every phone call, and then you give them the freedom and flexibility to personalize the subject line and create a story around relevance in your opening sentences, then they're able to focus on that creativity and let the messaging that your product marketing team has created about who you are as an organization sort of anchor that message down. So it's a consistent level message between marketing, sales, and sales development. So that's the rail part. The part where they get to steer and accelerate and brake is how they're creative around crafting subject lines and drawing relevance to why they should be engaging with us now.
Yep. So actually, a little chance to tell people what EverString does.
Yeah.
What's an example, like values? I hate the word value statement because it's just so non-human. But like one of those messages around what is the value of EverString to a prospect? What catches their interest?
Yeah.
What would one of these messages that product marketing comes up with, they stick in an email?
Yeah, yeah. Good question. So, Marketo users for a long time have, Marketo, Eloqua, Pardot users for a long time have sort of been very programmatic about how they are very data-driven around how they build their programs. But very few people have been data-driven around how to build audiences, what EverString refers to as audiences. So people are very selective about the types of emails or webinar or live event campaigns that they're running, but they've not always been very data-driven around who they're sending those messages to. So EverString enables that. And so essentially what that ends up meaning is we help organizations to expand, prioritize, and enrich their database. So helping organizations understand what are the right accounts, who are the right people within them, how to prioritize them from an outreach perspective, and how to enrich those accounts with more data.
Yeah. It's a perfect chance to talk about some data, but I have one more question actually. So in terms of the messages, right, in email templates, social, my belief is that having an outbound team of SDRs can help marketing or product management, whoever's, the corporate version of content creation, get smarter, more targeted about what they're actually creating.
Yep.
But it EverString, to what do you think that the SDR team or outbound, how much of the sort of core messages do they help come up with or refine versus the marketing product management team? Is it 50-50, 80-20 one way, 20-80 the other, at least in the stuff that's used within outbound, because that kind of content and messaging can be different than the stuff that pumped out on the website.
Yeah, I would say it's hard for me to put a percentage on it. It's more largely driven by the marketing department than it would be by the sales development team. So I don't know if that means 80-20 or 70-30. So, it's probably somewhere between those two ranges. We get a lot of really great, we're able to give a lot of great feedback to our marketing department around what's resonating. It's hard to determine what's resonating most in an email, but I think conversationally, as we're speaking to folks over the phone, we get a much better understanding of what works and what doesn't, because there's either we give a pitch and there's a moment of silence, or we give a pitch and people are like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So still ton of value in utilizing the phone, and certainly, the sort of anecdotal feedback that you get from trade shows and virtual events.
Great. You mentioned the phone, big believers. How do you see the phone fitting into your, to the day-to-day lives of your prospectors? Is it more, they generally have call goals? Does some people use it in other ways? How do you have those conversations with the team? And how do you actually get them to use it? Especially with millennials who, if they're newer, they tend to have that phone fear.
Yeah, phone fear, I think, is a big, big issue. It's amazing because, in the seat that I sit in, I get, dozens, hundreds of emails on a daily basis, but I get very few phone calls, right? And I try to let the SDRs know that, right? I'm like, hey, look, almost nobody calls me. Plenty of people email me. I don't respond to very many of their emails. So I still think the phone is highly valuable. We ask the SDRs here only to make 25 phone calls a day. So highly targeted around and sort of wrapped into the cadences that we use that, mix between phone, email, and social. I think if you wanted to break down, why is the phone important? It's important because when you're running a cadence that includes phone, email, and social, you're stronger than if you just called. right? So if they're coming from an organization where it's just heavy, heavy calling and they're saying, hey, you know, I've done that in the past. It was not very successful. When you mix those three together, they each become stronger, right? Because, you know, they start to become these moments where you're reaching out to a prospect, they recognize the email, they recognize the social touch, they've seen that you looked at their LinkedIn profile, you know, they have heard your voicemails. And so the collective of the three ends up being, you know, certainly stronger than the individual pieces.
I saw you had a couple posts. I sort of did some, I know you're a big fan of social selling, so I did some social stalking of you.
Oh, cool.
You had a couple of posts where you're talking about using Snapchat and Tinder, Grindr and stuff like that for reaching your prospects.
I'm not sure what that for.
Oh, really? What kind of prospects are we talking about?
Can you maybe elaborate?
Snapchat, I can see.
I'd love to hear how some of those, you know, the non-traditional, you know, phone, email, LinkedIn touches, how have those worked out for you?
Well, I think, you know, I think we, saying that people get lots of emails and are overloaded with emails is like beyond cliche in 16, and certainly we're all thinking about 17. You're not so shocking or surprising anybody by saying, hey, lots of people get lots of emails. And I think a lot of people focus on crafting the perfect email, when I think that's a bit of a fallacy, right? Like you can only get to so personalized or so relevant to a business at the end, or to an individual. At the end of the day, if they're not going to open an email, they're not going to open it, right? It's more about finding the channel where people like to communicate and going to that. And, you know, for us, that's largely on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Although for certain marketers or certain salespeople that we target, Twitter might be a more relevant communication channel. And so we try to have an understanding of where the prospect communicates most and then go have the conversation there. And it's less about like, hey, let's just go to these, you know, newfangled communication channels. No, let's go to the channels where these people like to have a conversation and start it there.
Gotcha. I was picturing a Tinder army of you guys just swiping right on all the prospects.
That'd be great. If somebody would like to build that, we'll buy it.
The next generation, eh?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Hey, moving on to sort of the next section. Can you tell me about one thing, something you screwed up, you know, when you're building your first outbound team?
Yeah. I loaded a database full of leads and contacts and told them to make 100 phone calls a day.
How'd that work out?
It did not work out. It's interesting. As we transition to being, I think what the industry feels most comfortable calling account-based sales development, as we transition to being more account-focused or account-based, we saw our response rates just jump through the roof, right? We were able to send fewer emails, make fewer phone calls, fewer social touches, yep. And as a result, engage a lot more people. The other thing too is, and sorry, what's the audience here? Can I curse or no?
Yeah, you can curse.
Knock yourself out, yeah.
Great. I will then. The other thing too is when you're running a practice like that, you get told to fuck off a lot, right? And when you're thoughtful and personalized and relevant to a prospect, even when they don't want your stuff, they will respond by saying, that was the best email I've ever read, or I can't believe what a great SDR you are. I don't want your stuff, but I'd love to hire you. And I've got a stack about this big of emails back from prospects, and we display them here in the office, of people saying, I'd love to hire you. I don't know what you, I don't care for what you're doing, but I want you on my team. And that is, to me, that drives SDRs forward. They're like, hey, like, yeah, sure, wrong time or wrong message, but this person understands what I'm doing. They appreciate the thoughtfulness that's going into my outreach. And so one, we became wildly more successful in terms of the meetings that we booked, the opportunities that we generated, and the deals that the AEs we support closed. But two, the responses that we were getting from the prospects were so positive that each SDR knew immediately, like, this was the way that they had to do things going forward.
That's awesome. Sort of a couple follow-up questions. Can we talk about what was the old world? What did that look like from a numbers perspective? You know, yes. making 100 calls a day, uploading a list. Can you elaborate a little bit there?
Yeah. I mean, in the early days of Everstring, we were such a small organization. We were a Series A company, very, very lean as a business. We didn't have a marketing or demand gen team. So, you know, we acquired names in every way possible. We did not use our own product internally because we're standing up customers and we didn't have the time or bandwidth to utilize our own stuff, which is probably not something I would recommend. I think if you want people to believe in the product that you sell, you've got to use it yourself. So that was a big part of our transition. And it also, you know, what our product does is, you know, it tells you which accounts are most likely to buy from you. So if you know that, you know, you can spend the time and effort and do the research because you're talking to the right type of company. It's interesting. You sort of rewind back to my days at Marketo where everything was highly, highly inbound. Well, you know, we got lots and lots of terrible leads that we spent hours and hours every week chasing down, but the SDRs knew that they were bad. But they had SLAs around them, so they had to call them. Mm-hmm. Here, we have an understanding that the account's a good fit. We're going to spend the time. We're going to talk to, you know, in some cases, up to 40 people within that organization. Wow. So they do heavy research on things like 10K reports. They do heavy research on individuals that are in that company to help, foster that first introduction. So a lot of hard work goes into things pre-call here. And as a result, we see the benefits in spades.
It's huge. Just to help us compare sort of apples and, or compare the old world and new world in the, when you're doing the sort of mass list building versus the more personalized account-based approach, can you share some of the numbers? Like
a week in the life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, an SDR on any given day would probably make between 70 and 100 phone calls. So between 350 and 500 phone calls a week. They would send probably about half that number of emails just because they'd be calling people multiple times in a day. And they were doing very light sort of weak social touches like in mails and things like that. And I talk a lot about social selling. I don't think sending somebody an in-mail is social selling. Sending somebody an in-mail is sending an email through LinkedIn. Those are two very different things. To me, social selling is having an understanding of who that person is, what they talk about, what they share, what they create and put out into social, and taking that information and synthesizing it into a benefit map in terms of what we do and selling back that way. That is social selling to me. And so we were probably getting around probably a 4-5% response rate, which was, you know, low, but based on volume, okay. Our conversion rate from meeting to opportunity was really low. We're talking under 50%. And our AE win rates were low. Now that is probably systemic of a lot of things that were going on in our organization, but certainly it wasn't aided by the SDR process that we were running. So as we transitioned to more account-based, fewer calls, fewer emails, fewer and better social touches, we now have a 17% response rate. We have a 65% conversion rate between the meetings and opportunities that are generated. And we are winning far more deals than we ever were before. And we're also selling to better companies. So when you look at things like, you know, what one of the most important metrics for SaaS organizations in terms of, you know, churn, our churn rate is dropping quarter over quarter. So we're selling to the right companies. We're resonating with the right message at the beginning and setting the tone for what ends up being a very smooth sales cycle for our AEs.
Cool. So then you mentioned, let's call it the old world metrics.
Yep.
And you mentioned, so nowadays you spent with 25 calls a day of roughly, so like 125 a week-ish.
Yep.
How many emails are they sending roughly a week, at least of the initials?
About the same. So it's a daily basis. It's about 25 phone calls, about 25 emails. And it's hard to measure social touches because we can't. But you know, if every morning when I log into LinkedIn, my LinkedIn feed is just my SDRs talking to prospects, which is spectacular. So I can see all the things that they're saying every day, which is great. And it's a very easy way to, you know, sort of teach. And, you know, I can like just do a screenshot and be like, why'd you say this? I would have said this, which is awesome and a ton of fun. And honestly, you know, social has just become such a huge part of our game. And I think my general philosophy on that is you know, SDR, the only way SDRs can truly have value is by communicating to prospects in a way that marketing automation can't. So marketing automation can't place phone calls, and marketing automation can't social sell. Marketing automation can, you know, certainly do like these social touch type things that I think people believe are social selling, like send in-mails, and, you know, you can do sponsored in-mails now, which makes me very nervous for the future of social selling, but it can't communicate the way a human being can. And when you're doing things like communicating with a prospect in the comment section of an article that they posted, or writing a little note on something that they shared, that just proves you're a human being. And I think most people in sales and marketing roles who are being sold to, they're just so frustrated by things that are just so blatantly canned that anytime that they're getting a touch from a human being, they're so refreshed by that, that they're willing to sort of give you a chance or take a look at what you're actually sending. I know I get so much, you know, what a term that a friend of mine by the name of Ray Carroll has coined as robo spam, that I it's noise. I totally ignore it. But the moment somebody, you know, sends me a message either in social or through email that's highly personalized, highly relevant to me, you know, I'm responding to those people immediately.
What's the impact of that been on your team?
The impact of what? I'm sorry?
Of the sort of social approach, you know, old world versus new world. It sounds like it's a lot more positive.
Well, again, you're talking about millennials here that grew up on social, right? They're used to communicating through these channels, not necessarily LinkedIn, but other social channels. So they feel very comfortable having these types of conversations, right? They've grown up communicating with people via Facebook and other channels like it. So they just sort of view LinkedIn as a grown-up version of Facebook. It's, you know, it's where I do my business, and Facebook is where I do my personal stuff.
Mm-hmm. Remind me, how big is the team right now?
We got about 15 people on the team.
15? And are you, just a couple of questions. Are they segmented in any way, small, medium, large, or by industries? And what's the sort of quota goal around either qualified number of meetings, opportunities, SALs?
Yeah. So I think everybody's got their acronyms for just about everything.
Never enough of the TLAs.
Exactly. So I'll try to be very explicit. So we have...
If you don't get that as a listener, you can Google TLA.
We have a corporate sales team that operates a lot like SDRs that close, and they prospect and sell into organizations with 50 or fewer employees. We've got what we call midsize, which is 51 to I think 2,000 employees now, and then we've got an enterprise team that's 2,001 and above. So that's how they're stratified that way, as opposed to by industry, and they are. They are the new term, all bound or omnibound. They're not inbound or outbound. They're both, although they are largely outbound. But whatever inbound leads come in their territory, they take care of.
Gotcha. How does the playbook or the individual, you know, actions that they sort of do for each? Do they vary between teams, or is it all sort of the same playbook?
Yeah, good question. It's nuanced, but not highly. It's similar more by persona. So we're sales off users. We use that for our outbound prospecting. And within sales off, we have cadences built around personas. A very sort of concise way of saying that is we have a VP or C level persona. We have our direct or target level person persona, which is typically a director of demand gen. And then we have what's called a practitioner persona, which we utilize across like basically anybody with manager or coordinator or specialist in their title. And we try to essentially run those plays within a given organization or within a business unit if we're selling into an enterprise company to as many people as we can. Mm-hmm. But each one has to be personalized, and that's the standard that I set. Certainly they have very similar messaging, but when we think about how we're messaging to executives, we're thinking business holistic. When we're talking about how we message to director level people, it's sort of departmental. And then at the practitioner level, it's, you know, really how this is going to improve their day to day. So it's subtle tweaks within the messaging, but they have an understanding that if four or five people from an organization are getting prospected into by us, they're not all receiving the same message. That's my greatest fear, is that a marketing department will collect either in a meeting or around the coffee maker, and I'll say, hey, did you get that bullshit email from the guys at Everstream?
They're like, which one?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I think that also helps. The other thing too is we, especially on the enterprise side, we do a pretty good job of mapping the organization. So we might say, you know, hey, Aaron, I noticed Colin performs this job. I'm not sure if you're the right person or he's the right person. So we give them an understanding, or we let them know that we have an understanding of their business and who the players are. And that goes a long way. Right, that goes a long, long way. The other thing that we've experimented with is something that John Miller, CEO of Engageo, turned me on to, was the concept of putting multiple names in the tube, which is on the to line of an email, and sending an email to both Aaron and Colin and saying, you know, hey, I understand you both work at Predictable Revenue. I was reaching out because I understand Aaron does this, Colin does this. Which one of you would be the right person to talk to? And we get a great response rate out of an email like that. So we'll put two or three different people in there. You have to have a very good understanding of about what each person does within the organization. But if you can nail that, people are like blown away by that email.
Yeah, actually, that that technique was actually popularized in a book called The Power to Get In, like 20 or 30 years ago, when they were writing it in letters, but it still works. And guys like Kreuzberger, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Experimented, but yeah, The Power to Get In, it was like one of the original classic prospecting books.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think the 90s or 80s or 70s or something.
The reality of what is true is what's old is new again, right? I think, the industry was largely account-based in terms of what account-based marketing or account-based everything, as Craig Rosenberg likes to say. That was the way it was for a long time. And, you know, systems like, you know, Marketo and Eloqua came in and said, you know, hey, you can sort of cut corners and talk to lots of people and, you know, sort of, you know, drop everybody through the sieve and, you know, we'll see what comes out on the other end. It'll only be people that are highly qualified. And that type of stuff is just not working so much anymore. And so as a result, I think, you know, people have really started to shift towards outbound, because if they understand the right accounts, if they understand the right personas, they can go in, personalize, and be hyper relevant. And people are far more interested in engaging with messages like that than just the shit that's going out to 100,000 people.
Yeah. No, I mean, 15 years ago now, account-based, we didn't have a name for it, but account-based prospecting is all we did. Or we did at Salesforce.
Yeah.
And we called the other version list-based, where you're just calling down lists.
Sure.
But that really regards to which company. So in fact, even, I don't know, it's like this training exercise that I used at Salesforce is now actually still, we call it the deep dive 25 exercise. It's actually the main exercise we still teach, at least in our coaching and in Predictable University and so on. Like, I don't know. It's just like these fundamentals don't always change. The tools and what's hot can come and go, but
yeah,
you know, like who are you? You got to get, in other words, it was always, you have to get into the company, and whether you use emails or calls or, you know, sending pizza boxes or whatever, like, I don't care, but you have to get into the company to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. It's interesting. I come from my background before moving to Silicon Valley was in consumer packaged goods and beverage. I worked at Red Bull right out of college. And then I worked for a sunglass company called Foster Grant, which is a very large seller of very cheap sunglasses. And, you know, we would go in to win business from places like Walmart and, you know, Shoppers Drug Mart and, you know, just these massive organizations like Target. And you don't win business like that by, you know, blasting to every major retailer the same message out of a marketing automation system.
How many accounts did you have at that point, though? When you were doing on the CPG team, would you have like all of Walmart? Would you have just a Walmart section?
Oh yeah, we'd have all of Walmart, right? And like, you know, the company, when I was at Foster Grant, the company had, you know, probably 500 large big box retailer accounts And then was, you know, in 25,000 stores across the United States. So, you know, it was all about going big. And then, in order to win those deals. And, you know, I remember being at Red Bull when we were going and, you know, closing, you know, casinos in Las Vegas. I used to carry the point of sale goods for our VP of sales. And we, you know, get on a private jet and take these people out to these elaborate dinners. And that's how you got things done. You couldn't just send an email if you wanted to score $100 million.
You mean you weren't sitting down for dinner with a script?
No. You mean you had to actually like see people in person and talk to them?
Yeah.
You get out from behind your computer?
Think and use your brain?
No way.
It sounds hard.
It was like work.
It was work, but it was a lot of fun.
Right on.
So hey, I think I missed, if you're willing to share, is there like a meetings goal per month or opportunity goal per month that the team, and I don't know if it varies by segment, but what's the typical goal for someone on the team?
Yeah. So we typically do between, so we goal them at a sort of on an average basis at 15 meetings per month. We have a metric that we call fit qualified account, which is, you know, of those 15 meetings, how many of them were actually quality? Because we're outbound, people are a good, you know, accounts are a good fit for our product, but they don't necessarily want to buy from us. So we want to track that data and we use that for our account-based marketing. So it's 15 meetings, 9 of what we call fit qualified accounts, and then 6 opportunities where an AE has gone on to engage like a solutions consultant or another internal resource to run a sales cycle where real sales motion has started. Those aren't cohort. So, you know, some of the opportunities that they generate this month, maybe from meetings the previous month, et cetera, but on a fairly regular scale, they're at 15, 9, and 6.
Okay, cool. Actually another question. So going back a bit towards, you know, as you're managing the team, and sorry, how long have you been there at Everstring?
Yeah, just under 2 years. So I started on February 2nd of 15.
How big was the SDR team when you started?
Oh, I was the first SDR.
Ah, well, there you go.
So I started, no SDR team at all. Before I hired the first one, I wanted to sit in the chair. So I spent a month as an SDR and I made as many phone calls as I could. And I sent as many emails. I purchased what ended up becoming our SDR stack, if that's even a real term. So I wanted to, to build a process and have it be repeatable before I made my first hire. So that when they walked in, they knew exactly what to do, what systems we were using, what the pitch was, what the cadence that they were, cadences of emails, social touches, and calls would be. And then I had proved to them that I was capable of doing it. Now, I had spent the previous 2 years at TIBCO, you know, managing people, and you know, I hadn't been on the phone in a while, so it was actually great and refreshing. And I think for anybody who's entering a business and starting an SDR team, I would highly recommend be the SDR for the first at least month, so that you have an understanding of what your audience is going to want to hear, how to build scripts for the SDRs, what email should look like, etc.
Yeah, amen. Or if you're coming in as a head of sales, you should be selling for a while just to get your feeling for how it actually works.
Yep.
But okay, so the last couple of years, what do you think has been one of your strengths or advantages or things that you do really well, you know, over time, and not in say tactic, but what works for you in terms of managing the team, building the team, or getting results? Or is it, you know, some people have an eye for detail, or some people are tech, or some people are more management or coaching or creative or whatever, right? What's one of your strengths that you've been working?
I think I'm a really good recruiter. I pride myself on being able to recruit and cultivate talent. I like to hire SDRs with zero SDR experience. You know, I've certainly had success hiring people with previous experience, but for the most part, I want somebody with no experience. I do think that we do things a little bit differently than most organizations. So I don't want people coming in with bad habits. So, one, I'm good at recruiting. Two, I'm good at enabling and sort of, getting somebody up to speed and being dangerous quickly. And then I think what I'm good at is creating a long-term vision for those employees, having them understand what are the things that they need to accomplish in order to get to the next role in their career. And the thing that I stress to a lot of SDRs, and some listen to me and some don't, is I think, and this is advice to any SDR who may be listening, you need to get promoted in that company. People who are taking on their first SDR role and leave to be an SDR at another company are destined to be stuck in an SDR role for a
long time. Yeah, like why?
Yeah, you like being an SDR is hard, and I understand that you can get frustrated when you're young, you can get emotional and say, you know, I got to get out of here. I'm going to go to this other company that's going to treat me better.
It's been 2 months and I haven't been promoted yet.
Exactly. But I think you stave that type of behavior off by laying out the vision to somebody early. And when I say early, I mean as a part of the recruiting process. You know, hey, look, we're going to want you to be in this role. Months, this is what those 18 months are going to look like. The first 3 months is going to be largely ramp. The next 6 months is going to be largely you sort of crystallizing yourself into that role. The back half of your time is going to be spent kicking ass and making a lot of money because you're always hitting your quota. And then the final 3 months will be your time to lead into the next career that you're going to have. And I think if you sort of break it up into nice waypoints that way, people have an understanding of what the journey ahead looks like. And there's no misconception that like, hey, 6 months into this, I'm ready for a promotion, because you set the foundation early.
Actually, you sort of answered my next question, yep. But at what point do you see people typically actually start to get more antsy? Mm-hmm. And how do you handle that more like that day to day, week to week? You know, it's month 7 and yeah, they you know, you have the 18-month conversation a long time, but they're like,
Yeah. So you hit the nail on the head there at 7 months, because it's always at 7 months. After an SDR has been an SDR for about 6 months, and that next month they're like, can we start talking about my future? It's very clockwork. I think you've got to have your weekly one-on-ones, right? And you've got to give people a gauge of where they are in the process, how they're doing. You've got to give them goals that are very, very short term so that they can achieve them and get a layer of confidence. But as long as you're open and honest with them, I think that you can stave off a lot of the antsiness. The thing that I've always found that works is, you know, when somebody comes to me in that 6th or 7th month and they're kind of like, I just feel like I've been doing this for a while, I'd be like, I have heard this a million times before, right? I've heard this from a lot of people. This is very, very normal. And it's interesting because that's always been like when I was at Marketo and the way we talk to prospects, and actually the way we talk to prospects a lot here at Everstring, is it's really people get antsy because they think that they're feeling something or experiencing something that other people have never experienced before. And actually people want to feel like their problems are common with other people. Most people get nervous around their problems because they're like, am I the only one that this is happening to? And the more you can
say, that's a good point.
The more you can say, hey, I've seen this a lot. This is very normal. You will get over this, and here's how we're going to get over it. People are very, very, they're very attracted to that type of language. You know, when we would be selling at Marketo and we'd say things like, you know, I've heard that problem before. Here's how we solve that. People are like, oh gosh, my problem's not unique. That's great. And we utilize a lot of that language here at Everstring and in our phone calls as well. And it's a great way to put prospects and certainly in this case, SDRs at ease and have them understand like, oh, okay, a lot of other people have done this before. I will get through this too.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly.
In other words, well, at least not about this. There's probably lots of other things that are wrong with you.
Correct.
But not this one.
Yeah. I'd like to pull on the thread there. Question I get asked all the time locally here is, you know, how do you hire SDRs? I can't find anybody that's an SDR because nobody that is looking for a job has SDR experience. Yeah. I love that you hire like SDRs with zero experience. We're the same way. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on your reason why?
Well, also, in this case, zero SDR experience, but do they have other kinds of experience?
Yeah, good question.
So why not?
For my ideal profile is it's a state college graduate who was either active in some sort of Greek life or the sort of perfect is that they were a student athlete. But the reality is why I like that they're a student athlete is generally because they're looking for a little bit more than the average experience. They're really good at time management. They're used to dealing with competing priorities. And that's true for an athlete as well as somebody who maybe had a job through college, somebody who was a part of Greek life or some sort of club. through college. So it's really somebody who, you know, the person who went to college and, you know, I just went to college and I, you know, went to class and I drank beer and it was awesome. That's probably the wrong profile for an SDR. It's more of that go-getter type. And actually, for us in account-based market, who run an account-based sales development practice, people with hospitality experience is, oh my gosh, that is like my new hot profile for hiring SDRs. So if you've worked in a restaurant or in a hotel or in any other hospitality field like travel, oh my gosh, that profile is spectacular because it's so customer-centric. It's so prospect-centric. And these people just step right into this role and kill it.
I found also people who worked in PR or recruiting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We my top SDR right now in the mid-markets team was in recruiting prior to joining our team, and you hit the nail on the head there for sure. It's just hard to hire people from recruiting in Silicon Valley because recruiting is hot, so they're making a lot of money. Yeah. In recruiting.
For now.
Yeah. For now. Yeah.
Perfect. We're about 37 minutes in. Aaron, I've got one more question. How about yourself? Is there anything else we want to grill Matt on here while we got him on the line?
Yeah, I shall ask just a question. So what else do you do outside of work that, you know, I don't know, do you have a family? Do you have like a hobby? What do you value outside of work that makes you think a better person or makes you enjoy your life better?
Yeah, it's a good question. So yeah, I'm married. I have two children, and I love spending time with them. My wife is a collegiate softball coach. Actually, the reason why we came to Silicon Valley was she was coaching at Stanford for a number of years, and so you know, I'm a lover of sports. I played college football, so I love college football, and I love being around, you know, sort of my wife's softball teams and sort of their competition. It's interesting. There's a strong parallel between the two of us. She's just has people about 4 years earlier than I have them. You know, she's taking kids from high school and sort of, you know, taking them from being young women and progressing them into more mature adults and sort of getting the most out of them as athletes and students and trying to create a great collegiate experience for them. And I think of my roles as very similar. I'm taking people, you know, 4 years later who are progressing from graduating from college. I'm giving them their first, you know, real job. And I try to create a great experience for them, try to, you know, up their game from a professionalism perspective. I try to make them a very well-rounded professional by exposing them to various aspects of the business as a whole. So, I mean, I personally, like, I love leading SDR teams, but probably the reason why I love it is, you know, coming from a sports background is I love the coaching aspect of it, both from the professional side and from the life side as well. For a lot of SDR leaders, they're also in part therapists, right? So, you know, we hear a lot of about
any manager.
Yeah. And we hear a lot about what's going on in our people's lives and I always feel a strong sense of like a paternal instinct where I want to be able to help them not just be great SDRs, but to also be better people and, you know, strengthen and solidify their relationships with people outside of work. And for a lot of people at that age, that has to do a lot with their parents. So as a parent, I think that I can help bring a unique perspective to them as well. So, I'm a family person and I'm passionate about that, but, really I'm passionate about personal development.
Cool.
Awesome. So last question to wrap it up here. It's sort of a two-part question. I'm going to cheat. So start with what's one piece of advice you'd give somebody building their first outbound team?
Yeah. So number one would be, sit in the seat for a while and get some experience with what your audience or, you know, what your prospects are saying or hearing or what they want to experience, perform the job if you can. If you're sort of stepping into a team that's already existing, you probably don't, you're probably gold right away by somebody to sort of improve that process. But even then, you know, spend as much time as you can, digging into their process, talk to prospects. I still try to get on the phone as often as I can and just make a phone call and send some emails to prospects and just get a sense of, you know, what people are saying and wanting to hear out there. I try never to get too far away from the SDR process. So, you know, if you can do that early, I think you'll be successful. Understand what your metrics are. Metrics are critically important. So whether you need to measure your team on call volume, or you want to measure them on the meetings that they sent, or you want to have an understanding of, you know, the conversion rates from meetings to opportunities, get a good understanding of what that looks like early. Because if you don't, and I think this happens to a lot of SDR teams, is they just start calling and emailing and setting meetings, and they're kind of like, is it good? Is it bad? I don't know.
I'm busy.
Yeah, exactly. The AEs are getting some meetings here that seems good. So have an understanding of what success looks like, and you know what the KPIs leading to success are, and you'll probably be a lot happier.
Right on. Fantastic. And final question, what's sort of one maybe more advanced tactic for our more experienced outbound leaders that you could share with us?
Yeah, you know, I apologize for throwing a plug here, but buy yourself some
Everstring?
Yeah, buy yourself some Everstring, man. I would recommend that to any SDR leader, because I got to tell you, the way we use our products here internally is fantastic. If you're an SDR team that's working with a content team and they've built a case study, you load that company that you threw the case study into inside of Everstring. Everstring will tell you a thousand other businesses that look just like it. You can use that to go prospect, because case studies are valuable, but they're only valuable if it's relevant to the business. You know, you can use Everstring to say, hey, you know, what were my last 10 opportunities? I want to find more companies just like those. And then you can say, hey, you know, we're working with these people. So Everstring helps you be super, super relevant. And I can't stress that enough. That's how we use the product here internally. I think personalization for outbound prospecting is good. Relevancy is great. So if you can layer those two things together, you will, like, people will take your calls. If you're going to load up Outreach or SalesLoft or Tout App full of a lot of names and send the same message to everybody, you're not going to have very much success. So be very strategic about the stack that you bring in for yourself, and think about what ends it actually drives for you. You know, I know that I work at this company, but I would never go to work for another company without having Everstring technology, because it has completely revolutionized how we do sales development.
That's awesome.
Yep. Well, I like to tell people there's no easier way or more common way for prospectors to waste time than calling on the wrong company. So Everstring, that's one of the things I think people should check it out. I'd like to see it myself.
So what's the best way we
can... Oh, we're out of time.
What's the best way that...
how do we find it?
Yeah, exactly.
So you could just hop on www.everstring.com, or I would encourage anybody here who's a sales development leader, feel free to link to me on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter. Here's the thing. In my early days of sales development, I got to spend some time with Scott Keane, who is a person that you guys may know, ran sales development at Salesforce.com for a while, is over running sales development at G Suite at Google now. Incredible guy, didn't know me from Adam, gave me 3 hours of his time, taught me how to do sales development the right way. A lot based upon Mr. Ross's here's teachings. Read his book, it was incredible. That's how I built things at Marketo. So if anybody is looking for any advice on how to build a sales development team, or you're running into a problem that you don't know how to solve, you can reach out to me anytime. My email address is matt@everstring.com. Email me, hit me up on social. I'm here to help. I typically bring in like one sales development leader per week and just spend like 2 hours with them, talking to them about how we do what we do here. So I'm a person who believes in paying it forward, not necessarily, no need to pay it back. It's never the right time to be a nice person. So just be a nice person to help people out as much as you can.
Yeah. Actually, so do you have a favorite social channel to respond? If, you know, if someone reached out, was it Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat?
Yeah.
Grindr. I don't know.
it's certainly LinkedIn. Although LinkedIn. You can okay. Twitter as well. Very few people hit me up on Twitter. So, I get a lot of followers, but very few direct messages. So
great. I'll have to do that right now then.
Yeah. Cool. We'll go on there and bomb you on Twitter.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Great note to end on. Matt, I can't thank you enough. This has been a fantastic episode. Thanks again for coming on and your time today.
Yeah, I would say it's a rare occurrence when you get to spend so much time with somebody that I admire. So, Aaron, thank you so much. And Colin, you're wonderful. You're now somebody I also admire.
And same goes to you, Matt. I feel like I've taken so many notes myself in this meeting today. It's been awesome.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
For learning. Thank you, Matt. Always more. Matt, thanks. Really a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you.